Welcome to the Easy EdTech Podcast with your host, Dr. Monica Burns.
Hello there. My name is Monica Burns. I'm a former classroom teacher and now spend my time sharing tips, strategies, and activity ideas to make EdTech integration easier in your classroom. You may be familiar with my books like Tasks Before Apps or my blog, classtechtips.com. Whether we've met at a conference or special event, you've followed along with my EdTech tips for years, or simply joining in for the first time today, I'm so glad you're here. In this bite-sized podcast, you'll get some quick info and actionable tips to energize and elevate teaching and learning. You can head to my website, classtechtips.com/podcast, for all of the show notes. That's where you'll find the transcript for each episode, links to resources, and any of the free downloads I mention. Later this month, I'm hosting a new free webinar titled 4 Ways to Make EdTech Easier and 4 Favorite EdTech Tools. If you want to be the first to know about this free webinar, head over to my website, classtechtips.com, and sign up for my newsletter. You'll see a big button right there on the homepage. Hope you'll join me for this free webinar at the end of October. This week's podcast is titled, How to Support Healthy Media Use in Your Classroom with Lila Schroff. Now, Lila is the first student interview that I've had here on the Easy EdTech podcast. And as you'll hear in the interview, I connected with her because she is a guest speaker. She spoke at Soundtrap's Education Summit this fall. And Lila's on a gap year at Stanford University and just so interested in all things media, business, tech, and politics. I'm going to make sure to include links so you can follow along with Lila's work on Twitter and on LinkedIn, but there is just so many rich nuggets of information from this episode, and I want to make sure that I get quiet and let us jump into the interview, the recording that we did just this week. So let's get to it and hear it from Lila. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today on the Easy EdTech podcast. I know I already shared a little bit about your work in the intro to the podcast episode, but I'm hoping that you can start off with us today talking a bit about your role in education and what your day-to-day looks like.
Sure. So my name is Lila Schroff. And first of all, I would just like to say thank you so much for having me on here to talk with you and just providing this as a resource. I think it's really valuable for educators to be hearing student voices and voices of younger people when thinking through how they're going to be working with students. Specifically, my role in education, I'd say I'm very much still, I'm 18, I'm learning, and I'm very much a student myself. But I've also had the sort of incredible fortune to be immersed in the world of media in many different ways the past few years throughout high school and right now. And so I've also been trying to give back some of those learnings I've picked up on how students are able to best make use of media, understand media, and be critical thinkers when it comes to media ecosystems they're surrounded by. So right now, my day-to-day is, I think, very different, actually, every day. I'm currently taking a gap year before starting up at college in fall of 2021. And so I'm experimenting with a lot of different mediums, from more written and more standard writing to data journalism, and then really to audio and podcasting. Actually is one of my favorite spaces where I have spent a lot of time. But since I have the liberty of freedom and time to be creative right now, I have a lot of room to experiment. But throughout high school, you know, my day-to-day was much more structured. I was in classes all day long. I had a radio class, which was incredible. And I was also a part of a radio program at KUOW, which is Seattle's NPR public radio station. And this program was focused on centering youth voices in audio journalism specifically. And that's really where I got my first chance to start working in the field of podcasting.
That's fantastic. And I appreciate you sharing kind of all of those different ways that you are working with media and your experience as a student and having this gap year opportunity. I know that I talk a lot with teachers about this idea of having students publish, really students of all ages, right, publish their work. And podcasting's become a medium that is more and more popular, and I think easier for everyone to wrap their head around a little bit, since we've all been, you know, probably consuming podcasts more in the past few years than maybe in the 5 or 10 years before that. And so, you know, I know you mentioned some of the other types of media, and you use that term media ecosystem, which might be new for my listeners. What is that, you know, term mean? And can you share a little bit about maybe your experience thinking about media ecosystems and using media in a more healthy way than some of us might?
Yeah, sure. So when I say media ecosystem, I think there's a lot of ways to really interpret what that means. But if you think about it, we're sort of living in these worlds where, you know, and really right now, just as much as we're interacting with people, we're also kind of bombarded constantly with information. And that information takes on a lot of different forms. So, you know, you have like your social media, which for a lot of people is starting to feel more stressful and more of sort of this like tug that you have to always stay up to date with. You have your more traditional forms of newspapers, the TV, radio. So like, I'd say any sort of way information is reaching you, whether it's for entertainment, sort of news or whatever purpose. And I've really been thinking a lot, you know, in the past few years and really recently about how to sort of deal with these constant streams of information that are always tugging at our attention spans. And I think especially for students, this is something that can be a big issue because, you know, right now, if you're a student, you're taking your online classes and you're sort of engaged virtually. And then as soon as you're quote unquote offline and not necessarily in classes, there's another stream of information, you know, with what your friends are up to and so forth. So I think there's a sort of multiple ways I'd say you can move yourself in a direction where you're living in a healthier media ecosystem. The first sort of comes into what you consume. And I've seen some quotes recently. I can't tell you who to attribute them to, but in the same way, you know, they say you are what you eat, which probably isn't true, but that's a quote's been applied to the media ecosystem as well, saying like you are what your media diet is, or you are what you read. And it's sort of this idea of you're constantly focused on optimizing your social media accounts or, you know, following every second of political news, that starts to sort of become your whole world. And that can be really hard to escape. So more on the personal side for students, I think something that's hard to break free of is, but really important is realizing that, you know, what other people think is probably less important than you realize, and being able to let go of some of that need to curate and optimize and sort of obsess over one's social media accounts or outward facing presence digitally can be really healthy. And then at the same time, consume stuff you're interested in, but don't feel like you have to be permanently bought into the news cycle and into all of this crazy information that I think, you know, right now it seems inescapable.
I really love that comparison, right? Because we've heard that you are what you eat type of piece, or, you know, you are, you know, who your friends are, right? We make all those kind of comparisons like on the things that are a reflection of us, right? So that idea of connecting it to our media use, you know, I know that if I am scrolling through or catching myself having spent, you know, a lot of time within an app, even if that's kind of under that pretense of, you know, oh, I'm learning something new, or I'm checking out a Facebook group where they're talking about a topic I'm really passionate about, you know, then I have to stop myself and say, right, okay, I've been in this space for a long time. So I think that idea of framing it of, you know, you are what you consume or what you're looking at and all of that is a great way to just kind of have a mindset shift to kind of remind ourselves of where we are and how we're prioritizing our media consumption. So thank you for that. It's definitely something that I know teachers and families and students are all thinking about, because we are consuming media, you know, a bit differently, which is probably an understatement this year based on years past. So, you know, you shared that media ecosystem term, which I think is great for us to use to talk about being in this space. But if someone, you know, is looking to reevaluate their media use, their students' media use, and they're coming across that term healthy media use, I'm sure it looks different for different people, but what does that term mean to you? Or like, how would you describe that idea of healthy media use?
Yeah, sure. And I think you're right that does look really different to a lot of people. And it also looks different based on the setting. You know, your healthy media use and your leisure time is very different from what it might look like in your classroom time. But I'd say there's two areas that really come to mind. The first is, if you stop and think about it, even in the past few years, there's been a bit of an acceleration to shorter and shorter forms of content that are becoming sort of increasingly bite-sized. So you think about the movement from blog posts down to tweets, or you know, long form video down to TikTok. And my personal belief, and I think this is something that a lot of people might share, is that while it's fun to scroll through TikToks and, you know, I can stay on Twitter for more hours than I'd like to admit, although you get sort of a wider exposure to a lot of interesting beliefs and stories and tidbits, it's hard to really dig deep and latch onto ideas and really have that full meal. It's like you're eating a lot of snacks, right? If we're going with that food analogy, but you don't get your like big main course.
Love that.
And so I think that can be I think that can be problematic though, because, you know, you're planted sort of beliefs or ideas, or, you know, you see somebody say something on Twitter and in that, you know, 280 characters, it makes a lot of sense. But if you were to read a 3 or 4 page article or engage with it for a longer amount of time and stop and think about it, you would probably interpret that message that's shared with you or that argument in a different way, and in a way that's likely more meaningful, in that it's actually pushing you to think and you're not passively accepting it for what it is. So I'd say the first thing would be a consciousness towards the, I don't know if length is the right way to put it, but the forms of media you're consuming and how in depth they go. And then another thing that I'd say is also really important is the source of your information. And I mean this in multiple ways. First of all, the veracity, the truthfulness, the legitimacy, like, are you consuming good, healthy information and not like junk food information, right? Like, is it something that you can say, I believe this, I can share this with my friends and know I'm sending something good their way? But not only is it important to have good, healthy information, it's also, again, like your food diet, important to change it up, right? You can't always eat the same thing. You have to be able to look to different sources. And so even though my political beliefs might align on one side of the spectrum, I want to be making sure to consume media content from the opposite side as well, to prevent myself from sort of falling into a single-minded bubble where I'm not able to see beyond just the information that kind of has that confirmation bias of acting in ways that only confirm what I already believe.
Yeah. And both of those, you know, analogies of saying, right, going deeper as opposed to just say snacking, right, on a couple short form pieces, and then having that variety, I think is so important, because, you know, sometimes this concept of media literacy or media use, right, feels a little overwhelming or feels a little academic, I think, when we're trying to put it into a classroom environment. And the idea of just kind of simplifying the conversation to say, are we surface level? Are we going deep into certain topics? And can we use that when we're reflecting on our consumption of media? And then are we only hearing from one source or one side or one group? And, you know, I know that I've been exploring Instagram reels, TikTok videos, and thinking about that as a format for student publishing and what it looks like to learn in those spaces, of course, too, you know, but it's easy to get into kind of a hole or to go down a different pathway or realize you're only seeing the same things. And I think being conscious of that, like you said, is just crucial when we talk about what healthy media use really looks like in any environment, right? Or when we're trying to help kids prepare for not just the the classroom interactions, but also what happens outside, you know, of the classroom too. So I'm curious if you, you know, as you're thinking about your experience as a student, your experience now, you know, speaking and sharing about these topics, if there is a, you know, a classroom teacher, you know, maybe elementary, middle or high school level, or you're thinking back on your what I wish it was like type of situation, you know, what tips do you have or what's something that they can do if they want to address some of these issues, maybe in a classroom setting?
I'm super glad you brought up media literacy. And I think it's important to sort of, yeah, demystify it and break it down and engage with it in a way that it doesn't seem like this huge big thing. Cause I think it's just, it's really a skill that a lot of students are sort of developing on their own as they interact mm-hmm. online. But one thing that I think is really important is, I guess, sort of a fluency or literacy when it comes to interpreting numerical information. Mm-hmm. Because I think the thing is you can see, you can read an article and sometimes pick up on something that feels sort of weird or something that feels, you know, maybe this doesn't seem true. Yeah. But it's a lot more difficult to be handed a graph and to say like, oh, this graph is wrong because you don't know where the numbers came from or how they were manipulated before they were presented to you. And so something I really wish I learned, and this is probably more targeted at a high school audience than elementary or middle, but would be an ability to recognize and really understand how data and numbers, even at the simplest levels, are presented within, you know, articles and journalism online. Because I think a lot of times, and especially recently, I've seen students sharing things where it's just factually untrue, but mm-hmm. the information is presented in a way that it seems very easy to draw a conclusion from the information you're given.
That's great.
That would certainly be one area I'd say would be great starting at with a high school level. But just because that might not be necessarily as accessible to, like, you know, your first or second graders, I don't think that means there aren't other things you can do and start with at a young age. And I've seen a lot of, it was sort of resources and websites where maybe more middle school age, you can, you know, All Sides Media, I believe it's called, where you can look at like the left and the right mm-hmm. in the spectrum of reporting on one article. And so I think when you're asking students maybe to do a report or engage in some sort of discussion about current conflicts or current affairs, pushing students to engage with sources from both sides, or not just both sides, but the entire spectrum is great. And also pushing them to find authors and content, not just from necessarily, like, if you're a classroom in the US, maybe look at international resources and how they're reporting on what's happening currently with the election, or mm-hmm. maybe look at young journalists and what they're putting out, really seeking that diversity in every form possible. And then I'm trying to think of good ways to engage with media for the younger age group.
But if, you know, what you said though was really interesting for both of those pieces. One is that kind of compare and contrast, right? And looking at things, you know, we do, you know, I taught elementary school for several years, and now I work with, you know, pre-K through 20 teachers, right? All the way up educators. And so, you know, one thing that happens at all levels, just as an English language arts skill, is that, you know, author bias. And sometimes, you know, we talk about it on a very simple level, right, with younger students, but it still lays that foundation for some of those things. And, you know, earlier this month on the podcast, I had a guest, Pana, shared about how, you know, we can look at icons and having young, she's an early childhood educator. And so she talked about how kids can identify, like, oh, this must be the microphone, or this must be the save button, right? And so you're having those conversations with 4 and 5 year olds, but it, you know, builds into what you're saying to say, like, that meme doesn't make sense, or where did that information come from? Mm-hmm. Or just because that graphic is designed, you know, beautifully, doesn't mean that it means anything, right? So I love that you gave, you know, the specific interactions of why it's important, because we know what it feels like to come across something on our feed and say, where did they find this? Or why would they post this? Or where did this come from?
Yeah. And as you're speaking, I'm also thinking of another way that I can see younger students engaging with these ideas. And to me, media literacy is all about critical thinking and mm-hmm. having sort of, I don't know, always being a little skeptical of what you're consuming. And I've seen a lot of interesting things where, you know, there's children's books or stories that presented one way seem very, you know, like your average story, but you can always dig a little bit deeper and ask, you know, one example is Goldilocks, and maybe that's too far down, but there's ways where stories aren't exactly always what the, you know, most surface level presentation of them appears to be. Just today, I was talking with some friends about a book we all read when we were in kindergarten and how we were sort of realizing the values the book was, you know, trying to get across later on. And I think like a lot of those subtle implied messages, you can sort of has the same, gosh, I don't even know if this makes sense, but it has the same sort of like format of, you know, an article presents information one way, but underneath there's sort of ulterior motives that are being pushed. And I guess thinking about what else is happening behind the word.
Yeah. And, you know, as you mentioned, that critical thinking piece, you know, really is a thread through all of this. And it's something that, you know, we might be, you know, already in the mindset of questioning something we see or being mindful of where, you know, this came from, or, you know, is there a green screen in this TikTok video, you know, or whatever it is that's going to have us question something, you know, but that's something for students really of all ages. And, you know, yesterday I was having a conversation with a group in San Diego, and we were talking about this idea of just thinking aloud, right? And modeling for students of all ages to say, you know, this is how I'm navigating this space, or this raises a red flag for me, or this might be problematic, you know, or just kind of not coming to a conclusion necessarily, but letting them see that there's questioning taking place, you know, as we're navigating these spaces. So I appreciate you sharing that story of kind of looking back to say, you know, maybe that book was problematic, or maybe that was something that, you know, didn't really affect us the way that it was meant to, or, you know, just that constant reflection, I think is such a big part of this. And I appreciate you sharing some of those student activities and components. And before we wrap up today, I do want to make sure to, if you have anything to share, I know we connected because you're part of an event that Soundtrap Education is running. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about your participation, your topic, kind of what that experience looks like as well.
Yeah. So that was a super fun event to be a part of. And I was lucky to be partnered with another sort of, I think he's a high school senior right now, so also a student, Daniel, who started a student podcasting website. And we discussed, I guess, essentially podcasting in the classroom. So a bit more specific than media as a whole, but ways to use audio specifically. And so I can just toss in some of the highlights from that, which were for both of us. Yeah, we really enjoy creative project-based learning as opposed to just your typical rote memorization. And when you think about projects, sometimes videos and so forth can be quite intimidating, but writing is more your like standard. So podcasts and audio really provide an opportunity to do sort of low production skill if you're really just doing the basics of just recording and throwing something together, but still create something that you can be proud of and that is different. And then another thing I really love about podcasting within the context of education is it naturally enables you to have conversations and again engage more actively rather than passively with your learning. And that can take a number of forms, right? It can be a conversation with a family member. It can also be sort of an expert interview and finding somebody that's, you know, really immersed in what you're learning about. So I think there's endless ways to use audio in the classroom. And especially right now, it's fun to do something more recording focused than I think like staring at a screen even longer. So if you're interested, I would check that out. And Daniel's website, I think, oh gosh, it's like student podcasts or student podcasting. I want to say the right one, but he has a lot
of make sure to link to it. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. And then apart from that, my own experience in media, like I was mentioning earlier, a lot of audio journalism. And then just last month, I did a sort of 1 month fellowship at a media company called Splice Media based in Singapore. And they did a month long festival on media innovation and helping empower media startups across the Asian continent called Splice Beta. And so I wrote up a bunch of different articles on different sessions and presenters. And a lot of them were really cool and I think really relevant. So if you have the chance, go to splicebeta.com. That's Splice, like S-P-L-I-C-E, beta, B-E-T-A.com. And I think there's some relevant articles one really awesome woman gave a presentation on a media company she's in the process of founding called Girlhood, that's all about showing the perspective of different young girls and helping them engage with media internationally. So lots of things that I think would fit really nicely into this topic, especially for educators.
Love that. And yeah, no, that's so great. And thank you for sharing those different examples of what it might look like for someone to podcast, right? It could be a student interviewing an expert. It could be interviewing a family member, right? And kind of gathering narratives. So just so many ways to put this into action. And I just have to say, this has been so useful. And I know that my listeners will just take so much from this because, you know, the examples that you gave, mindset shifts, right? Thinking of the ways that we and students interact with media are just so actionable. So I really appreciate it. And I want to make sure before we finish up that you share where listeners can connect with you, learn more about your work, follow along with you. What's the best place for them to connect?
Sure. For following along with any new articles or work I've been doing, I'd say either Twitter. My user is at Lila, L-I-L-A, Schroff, S-H-R-O-F-F, or you can also connect with me on LinkedIn, same name, same spelling. And I love talking to people and having conversations. So it's been a pleasure to speak with you today. And likewise, to anybody listening that wants to continue the conversation, I would love to talk with you.
Well, thank you so much. And I will make sure to put the links to follow along with you in the show notes for this podcast episode. So wherever you're listening to this, you'll be able to follow along with Lila. But thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Lila as much as I did. I learned so much from the examples that she gave, things to really shift my own mindset on the ways that I interact with media use and the ways that I talk to others about how they can support their students when it comes to consuming media and creating media. So, very excited to have had her on this week's episode. Now, just like every episode, I like to finish off with a few ideas to make this EdTech easy and put these ideas into action. First, review your own definition for healthy media use. Next, examine how students interact with media. Then, decide on an activity that gets students thinking critically. And finally, share an idea you have with a colleague. Now, don't forget, you can follow along with Lila's work by clicking on the links wherever you're listening to this episode. You should see them pop up in the show notes or episode description right here on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you're in a podcast app. Or, of course, you can head to classtechtips.com/podcast for all of the info and links that we mentioned during this episode. Later this month, I'm hosting a new free webinar titled 4 Ways to Make EdTech Easier and 4 Favorite EdTech Tools. It's a spin on a webinar I did this past summer, updated with more ideas and resources for traditional classrooms, hybrid learning classrooms, and distance learning classrooms. If you want to be the first to know about this free webinar, head over to my website, classtechtips.com, and sign up for my newsletter. You'll see a big button right there on the homepage. Hope you'll join me for this free webinar at the end of October. I love bringing you free resources like this podcast to energize and elevate teaching and learning. Can you do me a favor? If you like the podcast, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this. Tell a friend about the podcast or post a link to the episode on your social media. Even adding a few stars instead of writing a whole review can make a big difference with helping other educators find this podcast when they're searching for resources in their favorite podcast app. Of course, if you'd like to stay connected, follow at ClassTechTips, that's me, on Instagram or your favorite social network. I visit schools and conferences all over the world and now support organizations remotely with webinars and virtual professional learning. So if your organization is in need of any type of PD, just send a message my way.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Easy EdTech Podcast wherever you're listening.